Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. And I believe, Layla, that this may be the last Q&A with Layla for 2015.
Wow.
Goodbye, 2015.
Yeah. We got to send off 2015. Wow.
We're going to have to maybe open up a bottle of champagne.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm in.
Here goes the champagne.
That's great.
Sound effects. All right. So what's new this week? We've got questions from our listeners, as usual.
Yeah.
So anything new on the health front that you want to report on? I think there was a story in the news this week. Of course, this is the kind of story that makes the rounds this time of year, about the health benefits of champagne. It appears that champagne may have some of the health benefits of wine.
Oh, good.
So, so that's good news.
Because I'm going to drink some.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. All right. So champagne now ranks with beer, wine, coffee. You know, it seems that whatever you do, you know, if you do it long enough, it'll turn out to be okay for you. Like eating chocolate is okay for you now. You know, a little bit of alcohol is okay for you. All these things turn out to be ultimately okay for you.
Yeah.
So that's good news on the health front for people who are celebrating on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Great. All right, so what, we've got questions?
We actually, yes, and we have questions. I've got a comment here from Joel, which is funny. Dr. Hoffman, he says, based on another recent boneheaded FDA approval, it looks like you'll have to change the name of your diet to GMO salmon and salad diet.
There you go.
Yeah. If you include non-organic soy and corn in the salad part, you can just call it the GMO diet. Even more so if we're going to use canola oil in the salad dressing, right? And then he tells us a cute joke. Three stooges are shopping in the supermarket. Larry comments on a bunch of stuff one of them has pulled off the shelves. Gee, Mo, even we're not dumb enough to eat that.
Ba-dump-dump. Rim shot.
Do the pop again. That was good.
Rim shot. That's rim what, you know, in the radio business we call that. Yeah. We have a rim shot sound effect.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Joel.
Okay.
For that bit of funny,
Okay, we needed that.
We needed that, absolutely. Send off 2015. We've got a question from Gail. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm 63. Boy, does that sound old to me because I certainly don't feel like 63. I'm not on any medication, but my blood pressure is on the higher side of normal. So I'm torn between Super Beats and Neo 40. For energy levels and blood pressure effects. What are your thoughts?
That is a Hamletian dilemma. To be or not to be. Neo 40 or Super Beats.
Super Beats,
That is the question.
Yeah.
And the answer is, my belief is that Super Beats, which is a powder, a little more inconvenient to prepare than the lozenges, is probably the more business end product. I think the Neo 40 is designed for convenience. It melts in your tongue. It's portable. The Super Beats, I think, probably is the more potent product. But there's one way to tell. Because when they send you this stuff, they send you nitric oxide strips, which you can test your urine with. And you can see if you achieve the requisite color change with as equally well with the two different things.
A lot of people rely on things like that. It's like the ketosis strips. It's like, oh, it's happening. It's working. Yep. What I'm doing is working.
Get some immediate feedback.
Yeah. Gail also is taking magnesium taurate for her blood pressure, but now she has bouts of diarrhea afterwards. Gail, what you should do is, first of all, stop dosing yourself with magnesium taurate. Take a few days off until your bowels return to normal, and then start with one a day. Increase it after a few days up to two a day, and you just kind of can go to bowel tolerance, I think, for many people.
And what about switching to a different form?
That's a good idea,
like
too.
Like magnesium glycinate is very mild, or also the one we use.
Jigsaw magnesium malate.
Right.
So that could be
actually
helpful.
One of their promos, you know, when they demonstrated at shows, is they give you a roll of toilet paper.
Yeah. We all walked around with a roll of toilet paper in our totes.
Right, that has, like, the logo for Jigsaw Magnesium.
Yeah.
The message being that it doesn't make you go.
Right.
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 Okay.
It doesn't give you the, you know, the
runs.
Word. Yeah.
But now,
exactly.
If you want the laxative effect, you really want that, you take either magnesium oxide, or which is not very absorbable,
right.
Or magnesium citrate. Also not absorbable, but it runs through you and it will give you the laxative effect.
And that's what we typically prescribe for constipation.
Right. You know, what I've noticed is that I have some patients taking a lot of magnesium citrate for constipation. When I check their magnesium levels, they can sometimes be too low, which suggests that the magnesium's going out, it's not going in.
Right.
It's not being absorbed, which is, that's what happens when...
With citrate,
when you have the many things that are laxatives have what it's called an osmotic effect.
Mm-hmm.
They stay in the intestinal tract, and they pull water from the walls of the intestine, thus causing looser bowel movements.
Yeah.
And but as a result, they stay in the lumen of the intestine. They don't get absorbed.
Right, right. Okay. Thank you for your questions, Gail. All right. We've got a question from Raymond. I have osteopenia in one hip, and my doctor has recommended a product called Fostium, which contains genistein. Are there any adverse effects of this product that I should be aware of or anything? I've looked up this product, Dr. Hoffman. It seems very, very similar to OsteoSupport,
right?
Except we're using more Ipraflavone than possibly the genistein. But it also has calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin K,
all the cofactors,
some zinc, all the cofactors.
Boron? Does it have boron?
The boron, you know, I didn't see there, but it may have a little bit of boron.
Okay.
I can't think of any side effects of something like
is
this.
It premium,
not anything.
Premium
I
calcium like OsteoSupport. Good quality?
I would say it's a pretty good quality, yeah.
Okay.
So
that's okay. It's
Raymond,
one of the more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, you know, speak to the issue of will that help osteopenia?
Ah.
And the answer is, obviously this doctor is not that concerned about this degree of bone loss and believes that a little bit of oral supplementation should help.
Mm-hmm.
So what the latest studies have shown is that calcium doesn't help that much with bone. Calcium alone. But calcium with other cofactors we think might help at the very least to slow the loss of bone. It probably won't build bone. To build bone, you need things like strontium or ostanol.
Yeah.
Those are our go-to supplements for returning the DEXA score to normal, the T score to normal. As to downsides, you know, genistein is a soy derivative.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what is called an isoflavone.
Mm-hmm.
And isoflavones are a little controversial because there may be, I say may be, a concern in women who have had breast cancer because of the hormonal effect. On the other hand, some studies show that these isoflavones actually may antagonize the estrogen that promotes breast cancer.
Mm.
So there's no definitive answer on that. For safety's sake, we might say women who've had breast cancer, very high risk for breast cancer, who have active breast cancer, we may not want to give them genistein or diazine, which is the other major estrogenic isoflavone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the deal.
That would be the deal. You want to make sure, you know, osteopenia, osteoporosis is a very pro-inflammatory condition, so you want to make sure that you're making the right changes in your diet, staying away from inflammatory foods like trans fats, like too many vegetable oils, too much omega-6, you know, getting organic wherever you can, grass-fed if you're having meat, all of that. You don't want hormones, antibiotics, you don't want pesticides, herbicides.
Remember the controversy, and this was when I was a macrobiotic vegetarian. You know, you sort of see you see the world through your own perspective.
Yeah.
And we were continually looking for justification for our already preconceived notion that a vegan diet, you know, rice and beans and tofu, lots of vegetables, seaweed, no meat products, no fish, no dairy, no eggs, that this diet was superior. And one of the things that we used to cite is evidence that when you eat a lot of animal protein on a carnivorous or omnivorous diet, you build up your acid load, and thereby, you know, the physiology shows that if you're in acid-base imbalance, you know, when you're acidic, it promotes bone loss.
Right.
You buffer the acidity by pulling calcium out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they just did a study. Uh-huh. And I believe it was of kids. And what they found was that that was not the case. And in fact, their bone loss was slowed. Uh-huh. They weren't acidic, number one, mm-hmm. when they were on a diet that was relatively high in animal protein. And also, this did not promote bone loss. So this is a pretty definitive study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So
wow.
it kind of pushes back on the notion that, which some vegetarians like to cite,
yeah.
that, we're all eating, in the West we eat too much animal protein, and that's what causes mm-hmm. the problem. Actually, what causes the problem, we are acidic, mm-hmm. but it's the result of consuming too much sugar.
Right.
And too much phosphorus. The phosphorus comes from
yes.
phosphoric acid in soda.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, what also makes you acidic without any dietary influence is sitting on your butt. Is you just, when you have anoxia to your tissue, mm-hmm. when you have lack of circulation to your tissue, mm-hmm. you know, hours and hours in a chair or in a lazy boy watching TV, it promotes sort of an acidic
yeah.
condition in your tissues.
Yeah. Speaking of phosphates, there are phosphates everywhere. In, you know, if you're eating a lot of packaged luncheon-type meats, you may find sodium or potassium phosphate
okay.
in your bacon,
wow.
all of these. So there's a lot of places where a lot of phosphate is added. You might find that in your sliced bread products,
wow.
for instance. So you want to make sure you're not getting too much of that, if at all. So,
okay.
But, yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Raymond. Okay. Nancy writes, "Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I've been listening to your radio program and podcast for many years. Thank you for all the great information." Thank you, Nancy. "My husband recently was put on Coumadin. We both take numerous supplements. I'm inquiring as to what supplements are safe or unsafe to take with Coumadin. He's 56 years old, type 1 diabetic with many related complications
right.
to the diabetes. Can he take fish oil? Can he take resveratrol? His doctor said he could take ubiquinol, vitamin D and magnesium and iron for anemia, but is there anything that's not safe?" I would say any more blood-thinning type supplements.
Well,
however,
you know, there are studies that look at the compatibility of fish oil mm-hmm. with Coumadin. And you would think, well, fish oil is a little bit of blood thinner and Coumadin is a blood thinner, so you're going to get an additive effect. Actually, some studies have shown that individuals taking moderate amounts of fish oil mm-hmm. while on Coumadin actually have less pathological bleeding episodes, paradoxically.
Wow.
So that it seems to, in some ways, control hemorrhaging,
uh-huh.
harmful mm-hmm. bleeding. So, you know, the two ways you can go with supplements. One, things that interfere with the Coumadin, which make your blood more coagulable and render you more susceptible to blood clots and strokes.
Okay.
Alternatively, things that further thin your blood, such mm-hmm. as ginkgo biloba has been shown to do this possibly. Also,
right.
Vitamin E at
vitamin
high doses.
E. Yeah,
right?
At high dose. What would you call a high dose of vitamin E?
I'd say more than 400 international units.
Okay.
And most studies suggest that 800 is the threshold, but be cautious.
Yeah.
I think you can, you know, vitamin E is a very beneficial nutrient for somebody who has diabetes. Most diabetics have this just was established in a recent study, is diabetics mm-hmm. have a higher requirement for vitamin E. Obese individuals have a higher requirement for vitamin E.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I would take the vitamin E, but I wouldn't take, you know, 1,200 or, you know, 1,600.
Right.
I would keep it at 400. You know, what are some of the other popular supplements that could thin the blood?
Maybe taking too much flax oil in a supplement or something like that, possibly. NAC can thin the blood, but I don't know. I don't think
not
it
to
would
any
be
great extent.
Yeah,
I've actually seen
one
article on NAC thinning the blood, but I looked at it again and
right.
it was not very definitive.
Right.
So then the other way you can go is you can interfere with the effects of Coumadin by taking vitamin K.
Mm.
Vitamin K, you have to limit your intake, you know, but it's not bad to get some vitamin K. That's why when they say don't eat any green leafy vegetables, I think that's terrible advice.
Yeah.
But taking supplemental vitamin K, some doctors do this and they monitor the proTime and they see what happens. You know, the other thing is with CoQ10, CoQ10 is a little bit of a vitamin K analog. And some doctors tell patients on Coumadin not to take CoQ10, but it appears that there's sort of a genetic susceptibility to the effects of CoQ10. CoQ10 will bring your proTime or your INR down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to things that thin your blood that increase your INR or your proTime.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that happen very much. I think I've seen it a couple of times. You know, what's interesting about some of these reactions, they're very idiosyncratic. They happen to certain people, but they're not generalized. Mm-hmm. The vitamin K thing is pretty generalized, but the CoQ10 generally is okay. But people get so checked so frequently when they're on Coumadin that if you add one supplement at a time, you can assess the effect of the supplement. Mm-hmm. And then you can adjust say you want to take a supplement and you need, you know, maybe it neutralizes the Coumadin a little bit. You go up one notch on the Coumadin, like a quarter on the Coumadin. What's interesting is now we have new medications like Pradaxa, which don't have these dietary restrictions, or there's not necessarily any supplement interactions, although there might be with things that further thin the blood.
Right. Interesting. What you just said earlier about obese people as well as diabetics have a higher need for vitamin E.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's part of it getting sequestered by the fat cells the way vitamin D does.
It's partially possibly that, but I think the diabetics are under more free radical attack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think in
high
general, overweight people are, there's more pro-inflammatory stuff going on.
Yeah.
So unclear why, but it definitely showed that I think it was something like three times the requirement for vitamin D in obese individuals.
Wow.
Vitamin E, I said.
Vitamin E, yeah.
And we see similar things with vitamin D, too.
That's true. Great. Thank you, Nancy, very much for that thoughtful question. Okay. We've got a question from Eileen. My 42-year-old son has a platelet count of 119, and normal is between 146 and 430. Last year, the platelet count was 202. He's been feeling very tired. Also, a low testosterone, 187 on a scale between 350 and 1,000. The doctor...
How old is this gent?
42.
Okay.
Doctor wants to give him testosterone shots. What do you think?
Well, in terms of the platelets, it's unclear that would have an effect on the platelets. But one of the things that testosterone does is it actually increases the activity of the bone marrow, in particular increasing red blood cell counts, which is actually one of the bad side effects of especially testosterone shots, because they can raise your hematocrit to the point where your blood is too thick. Usually doesn't happen with the cream, but with the shots it does. So it may help the platelets. It's certainly, you know, it's advisable when you have such a low testosterone to improve it in a young man.
Low platelets, I think, can also be caused by food allergies, if I'm not mistaken. But
there could be some food intolerances. There could be some... look, something's going on with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the two may be linked, the low platelets and low testosterone, because individuals who are ill, they will see a decline in many parameters. You know, just sort of a general weakness, deficiency. And it's unclear what is the underlying cause. It's just that he's not optimal. And he needs supplementation, maybe nutritional supplementation, maybe hormonal supplementation. He needs to be built up. There's some form of metabolic hormonal burnout going on there.
Okay. Eileen, best of luck to your son.
But here's the proof of this, that testosterone's not about platelets, is that, you know, I guarantee you sitting across from me, that your testosterone is a hell of a lot lower than 147.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And your platelets are normal. So it's not about, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It's not just about testosterone. Testosterone can...
But I'm female, and that muddies everything up, doesn't it? Can we even...
Totally true. In so many ways.
Like, we're on the wrong dose of Ambien, apparently, because all those studies were done on men.
Major, you know, Valium deficiency.
Oh, my goodness, Oh, boy. Oh, thank you for your question, Eileen. All right. We have a question from Terry. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I want to start taking Ostera. However, I'm not sure if I should continue taking vitamin D, CM Core, magnesium, since these ingredients are also in Ostera. I just want to make sure I'm not overdoing it.
CM Core, I'm not sure.
D3, CM Core, magnesium.
Oh, okay.
These ingredients. Oh, maybe she's just talking about the ingredients.
The D, is there D in CM Core?
Is there D in Ostera?
There's D in Ostera, I think.
Yeah.
There is a little D.
There is a little D.
So you have to just kind of like go there and calculate how much D you're getting so that you don't OD on D.
Exactly. And Terry, the best way to do that is to go get a blood test from your doctor.
Right.
Twice a year.
But also just, to, you know, when you're taking like an antioxidant and you're taking vitamin E and you're taking a multi.
Right.
And you're taking whatever. You know, you could maybe, there could be four different places where you'd be getting vitamin E.
Yeah.
So you may want to do a tally. especially if you take mixed supplements. So you kind of have to take a look at what you're getting.
Yes.
But this doesn't sound like a, you know, we have patients on those kind of combos, and smoke's not coming out of their ears.
Right.
You know, they seem to be tolerating it very well.
Yeah, and their vitamin D isn't through the roof or anything like that.
Let me tell you, I cannot recall a time, I think one patient in the past 15 years I've seen go into a high range of vitamin D with what I prescribed, and I prescribed pretty aggressively. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, maybe he took some additional when he felt like he was sick or coming down with something, and his vitamin D got a little high. He didn't have problems.
Mm-hmm. His vitamin D got a little high? Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm going to not suggest people abandon caution in relation to vitamin D.
Yeah.
But it's pretty safe at doses up to about 5,000 international units per day.
Especially over winter.
Especially over winter.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that old. It was maybe 5 years ago, there was a study of Nebraskan men done. And in Nebraska, these men, I forget the study size, it might have been 50 to 70 men, they needed on average 7,000 IU of vitamin D daily during the winter just to keep their levels in the normal range, just to support during the winter. So that was interesting. Yeah. Terry, take your supplements, get your vitamin D checked next time you see your doctor. Terry writes, I've been listening to you for years and years. I download every podcast and listen to you each night before falling asleep. Thanks for all the helpful information you impart.
And helpful sleep.
And helpful, yes. Hopefully you're sleeping well.
This reminds me, you know, when I used to have a radio show on, now I have the radio show just on weekends. It's on from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern time, and you can listen via the Listen Live button at drhoffman.com. That's one of the best kept secrets. You don't have to necessarily have it on your radio. You can listen on radio if your affiliate locally carries it. WR in New York carries just 1 hour of the two-hour show. Mm-hmm. But when I used to be on a daily basis, they kept pushing my show. First I had an afternoon show, then they made it an evening show when I took over Dr. Atkins. Uh-huh. And then it went from like 9 to 10 to 11, uh-huh, and later and later and later. And people, when they took that off, because the station changed ownership, people were really upset because they said they depended on the sound of my voice at night coming through the radio, the dulcet tones of my voice, to relax them and put them to sleep.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they had any idea the content of what I was saying, but it was something about the dulcet tones of the voice. You know, so.
Oh, it's almost like learning by osmosis. Well, the brain doesn't have a filter.
Well, you remember those like language training programs? You used to put the tape recorder under the pillow, and then you would like go to sleep, and you know you'd know Mandarin by in a couple of weeks,
right?
It just would come right through your cranium into your unconscious.
Terry, thank you for listening. Okay.
Or not.
Or not. Or not listening. Right. Right. We have another question from Tom. Tom writes, my wife was diagnosed with prediabetes a few years ago. She doesn't want to go on insulin, and you wouldn't have to with prediabetes, and has been trying to keep it down by exercising and her diet. We walk about 3 miles 4 times a week, and her sugar will drop 20 points after walking, but it won't go under 100. It stays about 120 or higher normally. What would you recommend to naturally lower it? What do you think of chromium, cinnamon, and eating more fiber?
That is a great setup for part two of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast, because as our listeners know, we divide these podcasts into two parts, and we're about to flip over to side two.
Yep.
So, walk over to your Victrola, pick up the, your record, and, flip it over to side two.
Right.
And we will, I see the turntables. The kids like the turntables. They like vinyl again. Vinyl is back.
I have never gotten rid of my vinyl. Have you?
Well, you know,
I have an old turntable, and I got a new one for Christmas a couple of years ago.
I had a great record collection.
Uh-huh.
And then one fine day while I was all packed up ready to leave from college, I had all these great classic, Jimi Hendrix and all this great stuff, Rolling Stones, original Beatles, White Album and everything, Yardbirds, everything.
Uh-huh.
It just got stolen.
Oh, no.
It's gone. Mm. Yeah, it's,
It's It's all right. Vinyl's back.
Right.
You can pick them up.
And I could probably recreate my record collection for, you know, about $25,000. I could.
You could probably.
Okay. Let's tell our listeners to check out the continuation of today's podcast on in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.